Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky, is an astronomical journalist, lecturer. He's been involved in the science of astronomy for more than 30 years. Dr. Sky got his start in astronomy when he was 6 years old and living in the New York City area. During this period, he was a frequent visitor and student at the famous Hayden Planetarium during high school and college. Steve was involved with producing his own radio shows on astronomy and space science. He was a regular on CNN during the early days of the network and has written many astronomy columns for newspapers, as well as a regular column in our very own After Dark newsletter. Hi, Dr. Sky. How are you? I'm doing fine. And let me introduce, if I can, an internationally acclaimed physician and health educator, Lynn Kitai, MD, is leading on the cutting-edge era of early disease detection and prevention as chief clinical consultant at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute's Imaging Prevention Wellness Center in Phoenix. She's also a key witness to the still very unexplained UFO mass sighting that took place throughout Arizona on March 13, 1997, called the Phoenix Lights. After 7 years of investigative work, Dr. Lynn is coming forward for the very first time with startling photographic evidence and personal anecdotes relating to the Phoenix Lights event and much more. Her scientific approach, combined with her own intriguing experiences along the way, makes for a very compelling and insightful reading. Dr. Lynn has indeed discovered that we are not alone. She will be our guest for the entire hour here on Coast to Coast. Dr. Lynn, how are you?
Hi, it's a joy to be with you.
Oh, George. My pleasure indeed. Steve, tell us a little bit about the events leading up to this, because you're going to be doing something very special this week in the Phoenix area.
We sure are, George, and I appreciate the opportunity to tell all of our Coast to Coast AM listeners about this event. And as we'll all hear, the wonderful story of Dr. Lynn and her new book, which, by the way, Dr. Lynn will tell us, will be officially released on the 13th. But we'll be doing an event, George, at the Vision Quest Bookstore, which simply is located in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I would encourage all the listeners of Coast to Coast AM to simply go to the Dr. Sky website, www.drsky.com. And one of the reasons, George, I could find and certainly believe there's no better person out there to illustrate to us, as we'll soon find out, this most wonderful story of the Phoenix Lights. And Dr. Lynn, of course, has put over 7 years of her time, taking time away from her professional career, just to analyze what, in her opinion, is one of the most amazing sightings ever in probably the world of these flying triangular type craft.
Dr. Lynn, if you can tell us a little bit of what happened, because you were indeed a witness to some of those lights, but not a lot of people knew about you at that time in 1997, right?
Correct. Actually, my husband, who was also a physician, and myself had a very close sighting in 1995 to our home without any knowledge or interest at all in the topic. Suddenly, we noticed these three amber orbs in a triangle formation, actually a pyramid formation, one on top and two closely aligned underneath, very near the home. And I did get pictures of it. And wondered for 2 years what the heck we saw, what this strange advanced technology, it seemed, was all about. Again, never even knowing who to ask about it. And again, in 1997, January of 97, 2 months before the mass sighting, these amber orbs, and I call them orbs because the light did not extend outside of the edge. It's very intriguing to read in my writing as I kept a journal of exactly what occurred. Quite intriguing. And anyway, these amber orbs started showing up at a distance, and I started documenting them as well. They were so extraordinary on video and on 35 millimeter. And actually, the second night that they came back, there was a massive span of these orbs, over a mile wide. We could tell by the landscaping because we're high up on the mountain and we have a panoramic view of the city skyline, so we enjoy the lights out there and are quite familiar with plane lights and helicopter lights and street lights and so forth. These are quite different, and I happened to catch six pictures in a row of this object, this unexplained phenomena, head-on turning into a V-shape. Which was 2 months before the mass sighting, and it was so unnerving. I started making calls the next morning to find out what it was, and found air traffic controllers at the Sky Harbor International Airport who saw the same thing. They had looked, it did not show up on radar. They looked with binoculars, and in their words, witnessed six points of light equidistant from each other, perfect synchrony, moving slowly behind South Mountain. You know, again, this was very intriguing. They had no idea what it was, and I saw it kept continued documenting these lights on video, and on March 13th actually caught three lights over the city. There was the same formation in the same location that appeared about 10 o'clock, and by the time I got out there with my camera, three had disappeared, and I got the three that were left that looked like a kind of a huge triangle over the city, and didn't even know until the next morning when I happened to walk into a MUFON field investigator's home to find out what these lights were that I was documenting, that there was indeed a mass sighting the night before. And from there, I started keeping a journal and started looking for a logical explanation for what I witnessed and photographed.
It's hard to believe it's been almost 7 years, Lynn, since this mm-hmm. occurred. And since that time, we have gotten all kinds of reports from all over the country of large triangular-shaped objects being found, spotted at night, sort of similar to what you saw. Very quiet, lights at the edges on each tip as in a triangular shape. A number of police officers, for example, near Millstadt, Illinois, not far across the Mississippi River from St. Louis, Missouri, witnessed seeing an object years ago as well. It seems to be pretty similar, but these, even though these reports are of a huge object, they're not nearly as large as what you saw and what thousands of other Arizona residents saw in 1997.
Well, interestingly, and it's a very good point, this is actually has been happening worldwide. It is documented quite extensively in Russian. In fact, a month before the mass sighting, I didn't know this until I started really delving into what might be going on. Did I even find out a week after the mass sighting that this was happening worldwide, and then almost a year later discovered that the same similar phenomena had appeared in St. Petersburg, Russia, February the 19th, a month before our sighting, and several people captured video of the objects, of the unexplained objects, and that are identical to what I captured in January of 97 on 35 millimeter. Again, this has been happening worldwide, Belgium, as well as in New York, Hudson Valley. A number of these sightings have been happening. And what's interesting, most interesting to me about the mass sighting is that not only did people see what I had been seeing for so long, but and certainly confirmed for me that something was going on that was unusual, but on March 13th, 1997, thousands of people were outside looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet on a very clear night. These phenomena passed through the most populated corridor of Arizona for a two-hour period, from upstate Arizona down to Tucson and then back to Phoenix. And, you know, it just seems that whoever did this wanted to be seen.
Absolutely. Steve, tell me, on that day in 1997, were you in the Phoenix area at that time?
I sure was, but it's embarrassing. But truth is always the best remedy here. But, you know, I did not see this event. And friends of mine who were saying to me, they called me about an hour later saying, gee, did you see the object in the sky? And I said incredulously, no, I did not. But what's amazing about this, George, is very credible people, including good friends of both Dr. Lynn and myself, have seen this. I mean, there's a gentleman named Trigg Johnston, who is a professional airline pilot, among other people that have seen this object or did see it, and their descriptions are amazing. And as Dr. Lynn was saying, an object that's easily a mile in diameter, silently moving across the people here. And as I understand it, George, all along I-10 and I-17, this object was first sighted, the first object we're talking about, on the evening of March the 13th, 1997, just south of Las Vegas. And it appeared to be, an amazing object that was incredibly big in size, stopping traffic. People were just dumbfounded. And even to this day, of course, we do not know what the origin of this object is. And it's great to have somebody like Dr. Lynn giving us her, you know, painstaking work here for over 7 years in analyzing this whole thing, because she's seen these objects even before the March 13th event.
Steve, in terms of this this object on the 13th, how long was it visible?
The object, according to good eyewitness reports here, from, like I said, airline pilots to people like ourselves, was that the object moved across the Phoenix skies and probably was visible for easily about 5 to 6 minutes in total duration, and probably longer. The first sightings in the Phoenix area came out of the northwestern part of the sky. The objects literally sailed across the sky. Some descriptions of ground motion were maybe 30 to 40 miles per hour. That's unconventional. You'd think some type of a blimp or some kind of a lighter-than-air craft, but no noise. And the object then sailed to the southeast here in Chandler, where I live, and then south over toward Tucson, and that's when it was lost from visual sighting.
I know you, being the astronomer, hate to speculate, Steve, but what,
sure.
What do you think it was?
Well, George, I've gone over this a long time, and my simple answer, at least a long time ago, was that this is probably, again, some type of a military project. But I've kind of had a rethinking of all that, because as much as I've investigated on the website, of course, drsky.com, people can formulate their own opinions, there still seems to be a most incredible part of this that nobody can seemingly answer. What the heck was the object that we're talking about that, by many good eyewitnesses, was about a mile in diameter? And we know, I mean, I don't even think the military is obviously coming clean on the subject, but it even seems to be incredibly big. I mean, here's an object of 1 mile in diameter. It's almost as long as some landing fields, and yet here's the object.
Actually, some witnesses said it was 2 miles wide, that it went across both lanes of the highway and spread to the other side. And the other thing, just to add to that, Dr. Sky, is that when you look at the data, when you really look at the photographic evidence, and certainly that's given me the strength to come forward, it speaks for itself. The footage and the pictures that I took before and after, by the way, because it has occurred several times subsequently to the March 13 event for myself, are quite compelling, and the fact that it's happening worldwide and other countries are much more open to it as unexplained and unearthly, including China, that has an elitist group of scientists studying it, and Belgium, who actually came to the United States and said, "Are you doing this?" And the United States flatly said no, as well as Russia has been studying it for 20 years. Many, many countries have been studying this, and what I tried to do in the book, The Phoenix Lights, because all along, I must say, George, that I think Dr. Sky will agree with me because he has read the book, is that I just was looking for a logical explanation. I started out as a healthy skeptic. I wanted to find out what this was, what I saw, what I documented, and the more I looked, the more I found that this is unexplained.
All right, you stay with us. Stay with us, Lynn, because I want to come back with you at the halfway point, and also open up the phone lines to anybody, those of you who live in the Phoenix area specifically, others who may have seen similar objects like this around the country. But, Steve, before we say goodnight to you, tell us a little bit more about the event that you will be hosting this week.
Yes, and proudly with Dr. Lynn, Vision Quest Metaphysical Bookstore. They're located at simply 2225 North Scottsdale Road. That's in Scottsdale, Arizona. You can call them at 480-949-1888. All that available for more information on drsky.com. And I should mention that we'll have a lot of prizes to give away to people. Now, this may sound a little different. Some of the major telescope companies, Meade Instrument Corporation, donating a telescope so people can be better watchers of the skies.
Huh.
The good folks at Starry Night, who do this wonderful software package, many, many different levels of Starry Night Pro, will be given away, including a number of copies of Dr. Lynn's wonderful book. And, George, we've even gone a step further down the line. We've even got pastries for all of our guests and coffee.
Yeah, made like aliens, right?
You bet. No, in the shape of the triangular shape object.
Okay, Steve, thanks, and good luck to you.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Dr. Kitai, you stay with us. I'll be back with you in just a moment, and we'll open up the phone lines as well. We'll hopefully try to get to the bottom of this, or at least somewhere into that. I'll be back in a moment.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter online at www.coasttocoastam.com. Just click through the orange type to the secure server.
Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with my guest this hour, Dr. Lynn Kitai. She has written a book. She's come forward now. She's written a book called The Phoenix Lights and is now talking about it, and also is revealing some incredible photos that she has taken, a thumbnail sketch of it available on her website, thephoenixlights.net, which, again, you can get to from drsky.com or coasttocoastam.com. Lynn, about a year ago, a very close source of mine told me that he had reason to believe that this large triangular object that most people are witnessing in this country, and not the Phoenix Lights now, he was specific about that, that what they are seeing is some kind of military craft. He went on to say that it is a cargo type of vehicle with a different kind of propulsion system. It's huge. But what he did not say was whether it was reversed engineered or not. And by that I mean, of course, was it alien technology that we got somehow and then built this craft? But that's what he believes some of these other objects are around the country.
And there may be some, but I know that's not what we saw. I mean, as far as, you know, I have taken such great lengths to find a logical explanation for this. You know, as far as the Phoenix Lights event itself, the military was more interested in looking at my evidence and giving an explanation for it. And it's just too compelling. I really did the homework for not only for myself to find out what was going on, but for others to read. I had a 770-page journal when I finished my journal 4 years after the Phoenix Lights, just compiling the data that is out there that is so compelling, and quotes from presidents and astronauts and military and pilots. There is so much data out there if you really look for it, and I compiled it all so that people can just read the book and see what I've discovered along the way. And it's not just about these unexplained phenomena, these unexplained aerial phenomena. What I found out that was most intriguing is that when I did talk to the witnesses, who, again, were very credible and had wonderful stories to tell themselves of what happened to them on March 13th, which I also share in the book, but other things started coming to the fore. I not only was my own near-death experience reawakened right before the Phoenix Lights reappeared in 1997, but as I spoke to other witnesses, they shared that their near-death experiences were reawakened as well, and I found that very curious and thought, geez, is there a connection here? And it sent me on a new road where I started really looking to the possibility of the connection between all unexplained phenomena, considering the unexplained aerial phenomena as well as near-death experience, mystical light experiences, vivid dreams, and so forth, experiences that also had some sort of light connected with it. And lo and behold, I did find a connection not only in the experiences themselves, but most poignant was in the positive transformation that took place within the person that experienced these things, really experienced these things openly, with an open mind, and actually coined a new phrase in the book, an acronym for unexplained phenomena called an UP, because certainly we look up in the sky for unexplained aerial, but the enlightenment and an awakening that happens within a person that not only experiences but is open to it. You don't need to experience an unexplained phenomena to have that positive transformation, a connectedness to the universe, to each other, and certainly to our Earth. There is a very profound and important message that takes place within the experiencer that I share as well, and is one of the main reasons I'm coming forward, because it's important to get that message.
Do you believe these lights were attached to something physical or something else?
You know, there's two trains of thought. From the analysis that was done here locally by Jim Dellatoso, And again, I took great lengths, and honestly, I just got my pictures out there, the video of the March 13th event, so that people could see what we saw. That's what's important, not myself. But in the background, I did go to great lengths, not only to have Jim Dolatoso, who is world-renowned and has a database of over 200 of these amber orbs and triangle formations mm-hmm. from all over the world, but to the Brooks Institute of Photography, the University of Arizona Optical Sciences Department, and Consciousness Studies Department, as well as ASU Mathematics Department, and on and on, Dr. Bruce Maccabee in Washington, D.C., Navy optical physicist, for them to explain it to me and to analyze what I had. And I have to say that and in the descriptions of witnesses as well, and like the air traffic controllers the morning after that massive sighting 2 months before the March 13th, some people saw just the lights.
Just the lights.
And felt that they were attached to something,
mm-hmm.
but they couldn't see what it was attached to. And there might, you know, as Jim Dolatoso postulated, there may be a field in between these lights.
Mm-hmm.
Other people actually saw a craft. And some people were right under it. I mean, they're traveling up I-10 towards Phoenix for a swim meet.
Could they see detail?
They did. They saw actually like gunmetal underneath.
Oh my gosh! Is,
yeah. I mean, the descriptions are just astounding from all people from all walks of life and children as well.
Okay, let's go to the phones. They're lining up for you. First time caller line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with Dr. Lynn Kitai. Hi there.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Hi.
First, I want to tell you, George, love it. First time I called you, but I've been listening to you.
Okay.
For years,
that's okay. So. Go ahead. Thank you.
We were traveling down I-10, me and an ex of mine, and we had come back from Phoenix. We were headed back to Tempe, where we lived. And we saw the lights as well. And we always thought that, you know, being that a whole lot of people just blew it off as, you know, nothing, and there were a few people that actually came out and said that they saw these, a lot of us, we have discussion groups in our chat rooms locally and talk about this. Since then, anymore, most of the people don't do it anymore. My question to you is, have you ever talked with anybody locally along Tempe, Mesa, anything like that, in discussion groups, whether it be in person on the internet, and has any of these people ever brought forth pictures or brought back any other evidence that you haven't had?
Actually, as far as I know, and that's a really good question, there were four or five videos that came forward, one from underneath from the earlier event, which was really wasn't very clear. The four videos at 10 o'clock, which interestingly enough, were taken from different vantage points, north, south, east, and west, are very compelling. In fact, if you get on my website, I have after years of asking for some kind of investigation or explanation, the only thing that came out 5 months after the fact was that there were flares sent off by the Maryland Air National Guard. You know, and we said, fine, I mean, if that's the case, then reenact it. Well, no one knew that I had pictures 2 months before of the same formation in the same location, and I was waiting to see, fine, if somebody can do it, and the Maryland Air National Guard was not in town during that time, by the way, but I was open to any logical explanation, as were, you know, the group that was intimately investigating this, and that was never done, and a week or so before the third anniversary, these flares were sent off, and it was just so dramatically different than what we had seen and photographed the night of March 13th that I did come forward, and that was the first time that I come forward, because it was just so frustrating for everyone, including myself, that there just wasn't any, everything was blown off, just like you said. I mean, we were just blown off in denial, and nothing happened, and whatever. This was said all along the way by government and military, except for Councilwoman Frances Barwood. She was the only governmental person that came forward and even, you know, inquired about what happened, because
sure.
so much of her constituents did. But anyway, there are no other pictures. There are no other 35-millimeter pictures that anyone has come forward with. And what's been said to me by experts all along the line is how unique this is, that from the same vantage point, I have documented photographs prior to March 13th and after March 13th that confirm that these are real.
Let's go to our wild card line now. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been wanting to talk to somebody about this for a while and didn't really know which way to turn. Basically, the only people that know about it is my family, but I am a truck driver, and this happened in 1996. I was running northbound on Highway 93 north of Kingman, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very long straight stretch, and I could see headlights of two vehicles coming towards me, approximately a mile ahead of me. All of a sudden, the cap of my truck just kind of illuminated in kind of a neon blue, and it kept getting brighter and brighter, and I could not figure out where this, actually, I was looking around for the light to find out where it was coming from. And just all of a sudden, a huge neon blue ball of energy, huge ball, went past my truck at an extremely fast rate of speed, and it just kind of UE'd up into the air, into the sky. When it went up to the clouds, which I really wasn't aware that it was overcast at the time, but as it entered up into the cloud area, the whole sky illuminated in a neon blue color, and you could see the outline of all the clouds for miles. Could this be associated with what went on in Phoenix?
You're asking me?
Well, Lynn, I'm not sure, because that's a totally different report than what I think we heard in Phoenix.
Absolutely. That is different. What is important about what you're sharing is that it's about time that we get these unexplained phenomena experiences out in the open and not feel anxious or afraid to share. Because something is going on. Certainly, many things can be explained by natural or earthly reasonings, but there is a case for, just because we can't definitively define these things doesn't mean that they're not real. We may be, you know, looking on the AM dial for an FM frequency. We just haven't found the right equipment yet, even though our technology is as advanced. Until the microscope was discovered, we didn't know there were zillions of microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. And even the just recently we discovered that every cell has magnetic energy, and helped us discover and develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging equipment to detect disease non-invasively. Just because we can't define these things doesn't mean that they don't exist and they're not real.
Lynn,
it's time to really address it and to find out what these things are.
Were military jets scrambled during the sightings of these lights at all?
That's what we're told. Peter Davenport, the director of the UFO
Yes.
Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, in fact, he is on my website in the video that I did. I did two interviews, as I was sharing before, one for Fox and one for MSNBC, so people could see what we saw in the comparison to the flares, et cetera. He is in the Fox report on my site, www.thephoenixlights.net. And shares many, many descriptions and pictures from witnesses. He also supposedly had a call from a crewman from Luke Air Force Base that he taped, and,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds very credible, that this mile-long triangle craft actually traversed right over 7th Avenue and Indian School on its way toward the airport.
Stunning.
And the air jets were scrambled, and the pilot was really shaken up.
I would guess so.
When they got close, it just disappeared.
West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, is that me?
It is you. Go
okay.
ahead, sir.
Okay. My good friend John lives up on Glade Park here, and this is in Grand Junction. Went down to Moab, which is about 103 miles from here, to look at an arch. He walked up to this arch, and he had a brand new digital camera that he was trying out for the first time. And he's interested in arches, and he was right there by this arch, and he said he felt real weird. And he got sick, and he said he might be dehydrated, so he got some water. And then he took some pictures of this arch, and then got back from it on plumb down the rocks and took some more pictures. And when he got home and had his computer develop these pictures, here was a beam of light coming right down from the sky to this arch in one of the pictures. And then here's this cylinder, metallic gunmetal colored cylinder up there. And he's got a couple of wonderful pictures of that. He gave me one of them. And I don't know. He said he sent some in to your website. I don't know. That's what he was telling me.
Tim Edwards, by any chance?
Pardon?
Was this Tim Edwards, by any chance? Because in Colorado, Tim Edwards shot a cylinder-shaped vehicle that was hovering in the sky for some time, and I must say I do also have some pictures that I took of my collect sunsets, and I have some of that as well.
Lynn, I would like to get you back for a full program because I don't think 1 hour is going
to
do this justice. Would
well,
you do
I'd
that?
I'd love to.
Okay, we will do that. I've only got a couple more minutes left, and I just think this is just so important. And your pictures are just absolutely stunning. I think we need to do a full program on that. So we'll make sure that our producer, Lisa, gets back to you and we'll get you scheduled for that.
Thank you. I would love that.
This, no doubt, is a very perplexing episode. And what I find to be so fascinating about all of this is the fact that this occurred in a major metropolitan area in this country with minimal military announcement of what this might have been. It's almost like a nonchalant, we don't care attitude with this excuse of flares might have been sent up, and then they've just left it as that, almost a slap in the face of so many people who have witnessed something very strange.
I have to tell you, that's exactly true. So many people were so frustrated, including myself, because there just wasn't anything happening for months and months and months. And then finally, June 18th, the USA Today came out with a beautiful article, a huge article that opened it up to international scrutiny, and we were deluged by reporters from all over, media from all over the world, asking, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And shortly thereafter, this flare explanation came out.
Well,
and they might have been sent off as well, because supposedly the military was aware of what was going on for days before. Certainly, sending off flares would have been appropriate for them to do.
Well, they weren't too excited about it. So either they know it was military or they know it was extraterrestrial, but regardless, they probably already knew what it was.
Well, my big question is, why would they, if it was military, and again, Belgium came to the United States and asked if they were doing the same thing there in the early 90s, and the United States denied that it was, why would they do it on a night when thousands of people were outside looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp comet? That concerns me as well.
I know it. Strange indeed. Lynn, we will do this. We'll get you back for a full program and appreciate it. And good luck on the anniversary date of the Phoenix Lights. Seven years ago, March 13th.
Thank you so much. And we want to remind everybody that on Vision Quest Bookstore in Scottsdale, 7 p.m. Actually, I'll get there a little bit early. We're giving some advanced signed copies out at that time, and we'd love to have people join us. I'm going to be showing some of my video as well.
Okay, thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Lynn Kitai. Dr. Lynn Kitai. She has stayed silent for all these years, and do get up to her website. You take a look at the pictures, and you make up your own mind. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment with our guest, Jordan Maxwell, right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Reserve your free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin when you subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.
Jordan Maxwell is a preeminent researcher, independent scholar in the field of occult religious philosophy. He served for 3.5 years as the religion editor of Truth Seeker magazine. which is America's oldest free thought journal. His work on the subject of secret societies, both ancient and modern, and their symbols, has fascinated audiences around the world for decades. He has conducted dozens of seminars, hosted his own radio talk shows, appeared on more than 600 radio shows, and written, produced, and appeared in numerous television shows and documentaries. Much of his work is devoted to understanding ancient religions and their influence on world affairs today. I had an opportunity to meet Jordan about a month ago at the LA Life Expo conference here in Los Angeles, and we hit it off, and I said, Jordan, send me a little more material about what you do, and he gave me his website, and you know what? Fascinating work. So he's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Jordan. How are you?
Well, hello there, George.
Always a pleasure.
Delighted to be with you tonight.
You have an extensive background in ancient mysteries and work. How did you get interested in this?
You know, I don't even know. I just, as a child, I gravitated toward the, for lack of a better term, the dark side of the world. I always realized and felt in myself that there is a whole world of knowledge out there for me, but I just didn't know where to go to look for it because I just didn't buy, you know, what I see. I know there's more to life than what meets the eye. And so that's what really got me started as a child. And I grew up happily in a home where my parents, especially my mother, continued to promote me to read books and study and question everything. And I suppose it's just in my blood. I love the dark side.
That happened to me in terms of not necessarily the dark side, but a family that really pushed me into reading books about the unknown and to go ahead and start doing my own homework and start investigating on my own. And at the age of 11, 12, 13 years old, I started doing that. I think that helped my journalistic background.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I started asking questions when I was like, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, and the adults would look at me like I was a fool, but a classic example of a child's question when I was being confirmed in the Catholic Church about 9, 10 years old, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
and we were told that the bishop would possibly ask the children after the service was over if they had any questions, and that we were told not to ask any questions, period. Well, that night after the services were finished, the bishop did ask, are there any questions from the children? And I stood up, scared to death, of course, because I knew I wasn't supposed to. And I asked the bishop, I said, my father works with torches. I mean, he's a welder. Could I take a torch and burn an angel? Would it hurt him if there was an angel here and I hit him with the torch? And nobody said anything for a few moments. And then he said, well, of course not. And I said, why not? And he said, well, because you can't burn an angel. I mean, fire is a natural thing. It takes a wood or paper or something to burn, but you can't burn an angel. And I said, why can't you burn an angel? And he said, well, because angels are spirits, and you can't burn a spirit. So I said, why am I worried about going to hell when my spirit will burn if you can't burn a spirit? And it was quiet all over the church, and I knew from that moment on, there's more to the story than meets the eye on everything.
Absolutely. What a great question for an 8 or 9 year old to ask.
Well, oh, I'm just looking at the words and putting the words together, and that's what I've been doing all my life.
And now, when you talk about your interest in the dark side, explain what that means.
Yes, I do not mean that I am interested in the dark side to learn from it. I am interested to learn about it, meaning that there is always more to the story, as I said, than meets the eye on everything. And a classic example, if you're going to build on a foundation, say on a second floor, and you're going to put a lot of weight, like printing presses or whatever, the smart thing to do before you go starting to build on that foundation is to go downstairs, get on a ladder, and go through the ceiling tiles and look at the foundation of the floor. Look at the beams to see if the floor is going to hold that kind of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're doing now is you are standing under the foundation to get understanding, because that's where the word understand comes from, to go under the foundation to see what it's really based on.
Good point, Jordan. A few years ago in Kansas City, Missouri, at the Hyatt, they had a collapse of a corridor.
Oh, yeah.
And because it just had too many people standing on it. And I would guess their architectural studies, they did not factor in a total amount of people that would be able to walk there on any given time.
That's
and
right.
It collapsed. And it's exactly what you say. If you don't build that foundation first, the whole thing collapses.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you're going to ship a package, for instance, a big package, and you go out in the garage and you find some rope and you tie the package up, well, the rope is probably going to be fine for the shipping. But if you're going to take that same rope and hang it off of a 10-story building and put your life on it, and you're going to hang on it, now you better check the integrity of that rope. You better find out if it's going to hold you, because
as long as your neck's not around it, right?
Right. Because your decisions in life are only as good as your information. And this is what has bothered me from as far back as I can remember, that there are always two kinds of facts, the kind you look up and the kind you make up. And too many people get in trouble. Then their lives are filled with trouble because they just haven't done their homework. They have been told by other people, and this is something I really don't like, is when other people, the word is project, when other people project on you what it is that they want you to believe. That is absolutely destructive to any person's development. You never know. You might have a small child who's a genius, who's questioning everything and might do something very big in life. But if you continue to put the child down and tell him not to ask questions, I mean, who was it? It was I'm trying to remember his name. One of the scientists said that when he was a child, he used to ask the teacher, why is it we children have to answer your questions, but you don't have to answer ours? You know? So my point being,
he was a smart aleck scientist.
Yes.
Huh?
But, always keep in mind, as I have always, I like this one quote I heard many years ago. It says, always trust a person looking for the truth. Don't ever trust the one who's found it. The point being is that there is so much more to life than what we know, so many more facts that we're not privy to know. And even when you've got everything nailed down and all in a line, and then you find out 10 years later all the facts were wrong, and now you start all over again, because this is a continuing process on the earth. And this whole point that you brought up, this story that you brought up at the start of the hour about the finding
the Iraqi cultures, findings, yes.
Yeah, that's one incredible story. There's a lot to that a lot of people don't know. We can talk about that later.
Absolutely. Of course, one of the big stories over the last week or so in terms of box office appeal, Jordan, is Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. I haven't seen the movie yet. I like to wait a few weeks, let things die down, and then go and see it myself, and I'll make up my own mind.
Yeah, me too.
But without getting involved with you now in the historical reference to what may or may not have happened, I am particularly interested in the man and his powers that he may or may not have had. Did you ever look into that?
Well, yes, but there's just an awful lot of area that we don't know for sure, because we're trusting church officials to pass down to us the history, and we know all corporations lie on their paper. So we never know what for sure took place, but there is some valid research has been done in the first century. I hesitate to talk about the movie also because I haven't seen it either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe, let me say it this way, I have the highest of admiration for the man and his work, Mel Gibson. I have the highest of admiration for him. I do not believe he produced the movie to cause harm.
No.
I believe, and it's just my take on the thing, I believe that he produced it because he felt, as so many of us do, that our culture is racing to superior. superiority in technology, but we're losing our spiritual dynamics in our race. We're losing track of our spirituality, and so this was his way, I believe, of pointing up that there are more important things in the world than just making money and technology.
Do you think we're running against a clock here, Jordan?
I'm totally sure of it.
You
absolutely
are?
Absolutely, yeah. I have no doubt in my mind about that, and it's getting awful late. I don't even know where to start on that, but I do believe that there is a time in which mankind reaches a point of no return, so to speak. I think he's reached it many times in the past, and I don't think ours is the only civilization like us that is highly technical. I'm totally sure that there were. You cannot look at the monolithic structures of the world all over the earth and not know that there were profoundly brilliant people far, far back in time. And unfortunately, our religious and political establishment have marginalized all of those things. And it's only until, like myself, you go to Egypt and go into the pyramids and go into the temples, do you really begin to appreciate the profoundness of these ancient people and what they were doing?
Why do you think they marginalized this? I mean, what did they have to gain by doing that?
Well, I think that its bottom line is control. And you naturally, if you want to control people, you must control what they know. You don't want to have to run for You don't want to run for mayor in a town filled with profound geniuses and
they don't need you, right?
Superior people. The more you can keep them occupied watching basketball, the better off everybody's going to be. And so I think that the religious system, especially the religious system, and I have nothing against spirituality at all. I'm talking about the corporate religious system that came out of Europe. We're talking about 2,000 years or 1,600 years at least of the church dominating Europe, and the Europe, of course, dominating the world. And there is an agenda which has been outlined thousands of years ago.
Well,
and it's still in operation today.
With this agenda and with the, as you talked about, some of the incredible buildings that were left behind years ago, do you think they were made by societies who developed their own technology, or do you think they had some help from someone up there?
I think they had help from somebody out there. That's just my subjective opinion, but I my gut feeling is, as brilliant as this creature we call man is, and it is an incredible creation, we humans, but I don't think that we have the ability to do all the things that were done. There's no doubt in my mind that we are not alone in the universe, and it's always, George, amazed me to hear scientists and astronomers philosophizing in fields that they are not prepared to talk about. But they talk about the fact that we obviously know that there's life out there, but they could never get here because the distances of space are just too much. I think how absolutely ludicrous that is for an intelligent person to make a statement like that, when the fact is you don't know how far along these people or these entities have progressed. You don't know what their evolution is.
Precisely.
They've been around for hundreds and hundreds of millions of years.
I mean, these scientists are making reference based on the technology they understand today.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
We were told that a man's body could not go more, 25 miles an hour back in 1920s?
Mm-hmm.
We were told you couldn't go any more. 25 miles an hour, the human body cannot stand. Well, so much for that wisdom. And as I said, things just keep changing. The more we change, the more we stay the same.
You have ufology has also been a part of your entire history now, hasn't it?
Yes, very, very big. I have always been interested. I was born and raised in Pensacola, Florida, and right across the bay from me was Gulf Breeze.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
And I grew up in Pensacola myself, and I don't know why me, but I grew up having all kinds of other world experiences. There's very difficult to try and explain it, but my whole life was filled with strange things happening, seeing strange things that other people didn't see or having experiences that other people couldn't relate to. And so I am totally sure there is something very legitimate going on in that area of Pensacola.
Did you get going in your career? Did the Barney and Betty Hill case get you going as it did me?
No, I really wasn't very well aware of that one. But my own personal experiences are what got me going. I mean, as a child, I would wake up. I put my bed purposely by my window so I could look up at the moon and the stars at night. and I'd lay there at night looking and thinking about what might be out there in space. And then I'd fall asleep. And I'm talking about 10, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And then I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would see someone at my window. Right, and my head's right there at the window. And they would be there looking at me. And when I'd wake up, I'd see them, but they would move instantly. But I saw them, but they would move. And I quickly, as a kid, you'd move very quick. I pop open the screen, and the yard is lit by the moon. There's no one there.
But you're convinced someone was.
Oh, yeah. I saw them. Yeah. So, and then, of course, I had some extraordinary experiences with spirit entities coming into my bedroom. I woke up one night, maybe 9, 10 years old. I woke up one night absolutely screaming my head off. I was totally ballistic. I was crying and yelling because I knew that there was an entity in my bedroom, and it was extremely evil, and I knew it. And my mother, of course, screaming at that hour in the morning, 2 in the morning, everyone in the neighborhood was hearing it, and my dad and mom kept trying to come into my room, but I was screaming and jumping up and down the bed crying, "Don't come in the room, he's here."
You were trying to protect them?
I was trying to protect them, and that's all I remember, is I wanted to protect them from the entity that was in my room. And it finally went through the wall, and I felt him. I didn't see anything, but I felt the entity leave the room, and I knew where he left. I pointed to the wall. I said, "He's just left." And then I fell on the bed, and I was totally exhausted. So I've had these kind of experiences quite literally all of my life. So I am totally, positively sure that we are more than what we think we are. There's more to the human race than what meets the eye.
No question about it. Let's talk about that boogeyman that you probably saw when we come right back, Jordan, because when you talk about the dark side, that's part of it. And I'd like to get more of your take on that and many other things that we'll talk about right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter and reserve your free CD of Art Bell and the late Father Malachi Martin. 888-727-5505.
Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Jordan Maxwell, our guest tonight. Jordan, do you believe that that entity when you were a child was the boogeyman that so many children have reported seeing?
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. This was not... my experience was not with something that was a scary boogeyman. This was a very, very frightening experience.
This was worse than that, then?
It was far worse than that. I was totally ballistic. I was screaming my head off, and I was frightened to death. I could not see what the entity looked like, but it was there. And a child that age does not go totally off the charts that bad for no reason. And when it left, I felt it go out of the room. And so as far as I'm, and I, that was, as I said, that was not the only experience, but that was one I will never forget. And we talked a little bit about the UFO.
Yeah.
2 points I would like to make. First of all, I'll preface that by saying that I've done a lot of radio over the years myself. I've had my own radio show and been interviewed by many people. But you are an excellent host. I am very happy to be on the show and talking with you because it's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, thanks.
And in relation to the UFO, I've been asked if you believe in UFOs. No, I don't believe in UFOs. I don't have to. I know they're here. And I have to tell you a quick story that happened to Ivy West, who you know.
Yes.
And myself and Paul Tice, who you'll have to know later. I was, this was back in 92, back in 1992, I was going to be the best man at my friend's wedding up in Palmdale, which is about 60 miles north of me. And I went up there to spend the day with him, and as everyone's getting ready for the wedding, his wife-to-be went out with her mother and girlfriends to the market, and they came back, and there was an old man following them in the car, and he got out and followed them up to the house. And we wondered, who is this? And he came up, and the girl said to me, she said, we met this man in the market, and he said he needs to talk to the best man at my wedding. And she said, how do you know I'm getting married? He said, I just need to talk to the best man. And so she let him follow her home because he was an old man and didn't look very dangerous.
Suspicious, yeah.
And so I said, well, okay, talk to me. And he said, I've been told to tell you that you're going to be in a car and you're going to be driving the car yourself, and there's going to be a lady in the front seat and a man in the back seat, and you're going to be way out in the desert, and you're going to have a tremendous UFO confrontation, but it will not happen for at least a year and a half. It's going to be a year and a half from now. And I said, well, sometimes my friend and I go up to to the desert at night, looking to see what we might see. And he said, no, this is going to be way out in a desert, and it's going to be east of California, and they are going to pick the time for you to see them. And so he said, but remember, a year and a half from now, and you'll be driving. Well, a year and a half from then, I was speaking at a conference, a UFO conference over in Mesquite, Nevada. And on the way back on Sunday, I had Ivy in the front seat and Paul in the back seat. And we were talking, and I said, have you ever been up to Area 51? Well, no, none of us had. So we turned around and decided to go up. And we get up there, and we're sitting and talking with Joe and Pat Travis, the lovely people who own the Little Alien up in Rachel, Nevada.
Yes.
And so we're sitting up there, and then when they're closing that night, about 11 o'clock, 11:30, I said, Joe, where do we go to see UFOs? And he said, go out in the parking lot, they'll find you. And so Pat says, well, if you want to go where all the tourists go, you go out on the highway and go back south toward Las Vegas, toward Vegas, back south, and go exactly 20 miles. And you'll see a big mailbox there. That's the famous black mailbox. And just sit there and wait and see what will happen. So we got in the car, and as we're driving out, Ivy's in the front seat, Paul's in the back, I'm driving. I got onto the highway and turned left, going north. Ivy didn't catch it, I didn't, or Paul. We went 20 miles north of Alien rather than south, and when we got to the 20-mile mark, we slowed down, put on the bright lights, looking for a mailbox, couldn't find one. So we decided to turn around and go back to the Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we stopped the car, right where we stopped the car, there was a road leading off out into the desert, a well-kept level road. And Ivy and Paul said, let's go out in the desert. And I said, well, you're out in the desert. You don't have to go any further.
Yeah, I don't want to go any further.
I don't want to go any further into the desert. And it was totally overcast, from sea to sea, totally overcast. Couldn't see a thing. And they wouldn't stop. They said, let's go out. So I did. We drove out a couple, three blocks, and then all of a sudden I felt very strongly that we have done something wrong. I knew that we were in a wrong place at the wrong time. I backed the car up to turn it around, and I said, Ivy, I'm getting out of here. I'm scared. There's something wrong, and I don't know what it is, but I'm trusting my gut feeling. And Ivy and Paul jumped on me and said, look it, park the car. We get out for a couple of minutes. So I said, all right, but I don't feel good about this. They said, park the car. Get out for a couple of minutes. So I did. We could not have been out of the car more than 1 minute when the clouds just north of us, and remember, it's very dark on the desert at that hour, like about 1:30 in the morning, when it's totally overcast, no light, period. And just north of us, the cloud began to open up, a hole in the cloud, and two beautiful bluish-white glowing disc-shaped things came floating in, not zipping by, but slowly floating through the hole, coming, and as they came through the opening of the clouds, they leveled off so that their light reflected off of the clouds above them, and each one of them appeared about the size that the moon appears, the full moon appears in the sky. So they were not little dots of light. These were beautiful, about the size of the moon, gorgeous, glowing blue and white disc. As we were shocked when we saw these two discs come through, five more followed them. Now there were seven bluish-white discs hovering above us, making no sound whatsoever and scaring me to death. Ivy and Paul are jumping around like they've seen Santa Claus for the first time. They loved it. I was scared because I knew I had never seen anything like this. I'm from Pensacola. I know what the Naval Air Station has.
Exactly.
All the top-of-the-line stuff. But this was not anything I have ever seen. And I was legitimately frightened. And I told Ivy, I said, we're getting out of here, Ivy. I don't know what this means. I don't know who they are, and I'm scared. I want to get out of here. And so Ivy and Paul jumped in the car because they knew I was serious. They rolled the window down. I put my foot to the floor, flipped on the lights, and took off. When I did, immediately Ivy and Paul went totally ballistic, now themselves screaming at each other, and now they're scared big time.
What are they scared about?
And I kept screaming at Ivy because I am frightened. Ivy is now screaming, a woman screaming in your ear while you're driving fast. It's an extraordinary adventure. And so
been there, done that.
Yeah. So I screamed at Ivy. I yelled at her. I said, Ivy, shut up. I'm trying to get out of here. And she's screaming. And so I stopped the car quickly and threw open the door. And those seven disc-shaped things were now down on us.
Oh,
they
my
were huge. And they were zipping around the car. They were doing extraordinary things of coming together in a circle, blowing out into a seven-pointed star, coming back into a circle, blowing back out into a seven-pointed star, doing all kinds of extraordinary stuff. And they weren't hurting us. They were frightening me. And now they've got the attention of Paul and Ivy, and they're scared. We got back out on the highway, and we stood there, and all the emotions started pouring out. There were tears. There were laughing. It was beautiful. It was frightening. It was this and that. We went back to the motel, and for about an hour, you can imagine, the conversation was, what in the world did we see tonight? Made no sound whatsoever and did things that we have never seen any craft do. And later the next morning, I got up, and Ivy and Paul were over at the Little Alien having breakfast, and I went over, and I saw a bunch of people sitting around the table listening to Ivy and Paul. And I thought they were talking about what, you know, they were telling the people what happened to us last night. No, they were telling the people what happened to them in the bedroom last night that I slept through. And Paul and Ivy were visited, or they let me sleep through it, obviously. But Paul was visited in the bedroom at Little Alien, and so was Ivy. One of these days you'll have to ask Ivy to tell you the story. It was an extraordinary story.
That's and how does that tie in then to the old man who sent you on that merry way a year and a half before that?
I know. He told me I would be in a desert, way out in the desert. He told me that there would be a woman and a man. And incidentally, he told me, and I asked him why specific, and he said there has to be a woman and a man. Because it needs to be two witnesses to what you're going to see. Because the event is not for them; it is for you. But they want a man and a woman to be a witness to what you're going to see. And there's a lot more to that story, because it continued on once we got back to Los Angeles and I went back to San Diego. And that's even an incredible follow-up on the story we'll talk about another time. But nonetheless, I'm telling you this because I have personally seen some extraordinary and beautiful things that we refer to as UFOs. They made no sound whatsoever. They were right down over our car. They moved with the precision that I have never seen anything move with. They would stop, change places, and just stop and lock themselves in the air and not move, then zip, zip, and moving around again. Man, what an experience.
Jordan, as you think about it now, do you think you had anything to worry about?
Well, no, because well, part of the experience is I went back out there, and I parked, it was a whole story, and I don't want to go into it, but I realized that if they meant us harm, we wouldn't even
be here.
About
exactly.
So I know that it was some kind of a contact, and obviously the man a year and a half before had been given that to tell me. And
what a sight.
Yeah.
What a sight.
What an experience.
Too bad you didn't have the old camera and video camera with you.
I know. But you know what? I don't think those things would happen.
If you had,
because I think they're a lot smarter than that.
I think they tap into your mind.
No doubt in my mind about that. Yeah, and I think that they know, they decide a lot of things. They will decide where they will meet you. They will decide what you will be doing and what you will have with you and what, you know, we got to assume that these beings, whoever they are far, far superior to our intellect. I mean, they're like giants and brilliant people looking at children at play.
Have you theorized why here, Jordan?
Say it again?
Have you theorized why they're here?
Yeah, I've got my feelings about it, but it's just a subjective theory. But I think that there's a very good possibility that they have always been here, that this is their Earth. We probably are someone's experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And they have always been here, but they are far, far clever. I mean, we do the same thing. You can have an ant colony on your desk in your office and just sitting and watching the ants living their little lives and never realizing, looking through the glass, that there's a whole world out there watching you.
Dropping a little food once in a while.
That's it. I'm convinced from my own self that we not only have been visited, but we are living simultaneously with entities from other places, and I am totally sure of that.
How has that affected, then, Jordan, the perception of various religions since the beginning of time?
Oh, yes, that's the subject I love. Because once you get into the occult or hidden, and let me clarify, the word occult is a Latin word simply meaning hidden. And so much is hidden. And once you begin to see the paintings from the Middle Ages and the temples and all of the ancient paintings, you begin to see UFOs and flying saucers everywhere. And we're told there's nothing in Judaism or Christianity that in any way would conflict with the idea of extraterrestrials. We talk about angels. The Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, talk about sons of God. Well, the sons of God are totally different than angels. Doesn't mean the same thing at all. In the Old Testament, there's another entity called the Watchers. Well, this is in the Bible. This is Judaism of the Bible. This is Christianity talking about angels.
And what's so fascinating, Jordan, is almost every culture talks about extraterrestrials in their own little way.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. If you'll remember, Abraham, we're told in Genesis 18 that Abraham is sitting by his tent and three men come walking up, and he goes out and bows down, prostrates himself before them and bows down before them and says, "What is my Lord saying to his servant?" And they said that they were on their way to somewhere else. And he said, and the scripture in Genesis 18 says that Abraham begged them to stay for dinner, and he had Sarah fix dinner for them. They sat and ate, and then the two of them got up and said they had to go on the business. But the third one stayed for a little while to talk with Abraham, and the scripture says in the Bible, Genesis 18, that this was the Almighty God, the Creator himself. And he sat with Abraham, had lunch, thanked him, got up, and then left. Now in Genesis 19, the two men that he had entertained, we now find them in Sodom and Gomorrah, and now they're being called angels. And they go into Sodom and Gomorrah, they have supernatural powers, they cause blindness. Interesting, too.
Sounds like radiation, doesn't it?
Well, something. They had some kind of technology. And what's interesting is that the homosexuals thought they were good-looking men. Now, the sons of God, as we know, where is it in Genesis 6, where it said the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them all as wives. Well, the point being is that I can understand handsome, good-looking men talking women into the bed, but I cannot see some hideous sun creature from another world dazzling the females. So they must have been good-looking men. Well, this is what the Bible says in Genesis 1:28. It says that God created man in his own image, after his own likeness.
Now, let's assume we're coming up to the top of the hour, so we'll have to continue this. But but let me ask you this. How many civilizations might be out there that are part of the same?
Yeah, goodness. I've heard there's over 50 from government people who were in a position to know, and they've told me it's well over 50 different ones that they know about. And there have been a lot of other good researchers who are talking about the same thing. But that's the ones we know about. It's at least possible. And also this whole subject of the reptilian. That's another subject that I'm very interested in.
I want to talk with you about that and in this reported 50 other extraterrestrials out there. And I know you can't give me your full sources there, but I want to find out what governments do know indeed about this whole thing. So we'll be right back with you as we approach the top of the hour. Jordan Maxwell, investigative reporter, my guest. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin when you subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.
Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with investigator and researcher Jordan Maxwell. Jordan, tell me about these possible 50 alien civilizations that governments know about.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not really the person to talk about that. I have talked with people in government. I have talked with scientists who work with government. I've heard many lectures by people who are, you know, more intimately involved in that kind of research. And I believe that what Stanton Friedman says, my friend Stanton Friedman always says, that you cannot have it both ways. If someone tells you that they've had a confrontation with extraterrestrials or UFOs or reptilians, and you dismiss it as silly, if that same person were to go to the police department and swear out that he has saw you commit a crime or he saw you eyewitness kill someone, that his testimony would be taken very seriously. and you would have a difficult time trying to overcome an eyewitness testimony. So you can't have it both ways. If a normal person says that they have seen something, you've got to look at that. It's very important. And, of course, Stanton Friedman also says that scientists will say, well, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. And then Stanton says, well, okay, have you got a little piece of a black hole for me to examine? Because that's an extraordinary story.
That's right.
Brought back a little piece of it?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway. For so many years, Jordan, people who witnessed UFO reports were considered wackos or kooks.
Yeah.
Do you still think that so many pilots and police officers are subjected to those feelings still?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. But I'll tell you why I think that is the case. I'll tell you why I think that the people who would make such reports were always marginalized and put down. And this is, again, just my opinion, but I think that maybe the government has made a deal with these extraterrestrials, and the deal is you give us technology, give us your sciences, the best that we can handle, and we will put down any reports. We will try and help you to stay incognito. We will protect you so that if anyone sees you, we will come out with our pontification that nothing happened. It was all a bunch of swamp gas, and we will protect your presence here on the earth. I am totally sure that's what's going on from my viewpoint.
Well, and you know, Dr. Michael Sala would back that as well in his theories that this all started with Eisenhower working out some deal.
I heard about that, and Jackie Gleason and a lot of other people. Yeah.
You said that reptilians, that topic interests you. How come?
Well, because I've had at least 8 different people in different parts of the world, all of them very professional, well-grounded, intelligent people who did not know each other, confide in me long stories of their personal involvement with extraterrestrial or alien hybrid creatures. And I have to say that there's too much smoke not to be a fire. I'm not going to discount 8 different people who have given me 8 different accounts, and mm-hmm. each one of them is very believable.
Does that include David Icke, by any chance?
No, as a matter of fact, it doesn't.
Okay.
No, not at all.
Because he's a strong believer in this, you know.
I know, and I've even said from a platform where he and I were both speaking at the same conference that I was in total agreement with his feeling that they were here. However, not because David Icke said so, but because I have had personal conversations with people that I know to be very legitimate. And they're telling me the same thing.
Are they saying that these reptilians have kind of made their way into the somewhat human race where they may be walking with us and we don't even know it?
Well, if you remember back many years ago, NBC created a mini-series on television called V, and you can still read
it. Yeah, sure.
And it was about reptilians who have the ability to shape-shift And there was a lot of interesting things said in that miniseries. It was on NBC about shape-shifting reptilians. And they talked about I rented that television show, and it says at the very beginning, NBC said, this is dedicated to all serious people who love their freedom and who love their country. This movie was dedicated. I thought, wow, wait a minute. What is that all about?
So, what did they know that we didn't, huh?
Yeah, there's always that possibility. Look, in Northern Europe, there was an ancient priesthood, which we would refer to, I guess, as a white establishment of thousands of years ago in Northern Europe. It was called the Druids. The Druids had a very powerful political establishment. And one of the most important symbols in that Druid religion was the magic wand, like Merlin the magician magic wand.
Okay.
Well, magic wands were always made out of the wood of a holly tree. They were made out of Hollywood. And consequently, today, we are still viewing the magic of Hollywood.
Yes, we are.
And I believe that the word magic is very legitimate and de jure. I think there is a real magic going on, and it has nothing to do with the development of the high tech from movies. I think that there is another kind of magic that's being worked on us by superior minds, and there's no doubt in my mind about that.
And you may be right. What purpose, though, would that be for?
Well, I would think it would be for control, again, because we are, as humans, are so individualistic and so destructive to ourselves and to our neighbors that whoever is actually in charge, whoever that might be on the earth, they better watch the humans, because you can never say for sure what they're going to do. You think you've got them all nailed down. They may do something you weren't expecting.
That's true, which kind of leads us into secret societies, Jordan, something I have always, like you've been interested in reptilians, I've been always interested in secret societies, and you've done some work in that arena as well.
Yes.
These societies go back since almost the beginning of mankind, don't they?
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely. You can trace this, trace the concept of people coming together for their own just causes. And not all secret societies are evil, of course. And I need to preface my comments here by saying I have never presented myself ever as being the world's foremost authority on anything. I'm too smart for that. I am painfully well
aware just about
of how much I don't know. So I'm not the world's foremost authority, but I've been looking at this these kind of subjects for 43 years, and yes, the secret societies are a very powerful influence on the world today. There are things going on in the world today, politically and religiously, that would shock the normal person hearing it. And you can begin to pick up on there is a whole system of symbols and emblems and words and terms, catchphrases, flags, national coats of arms, presidential seals, corporate logos. All of this is a message. All of these different symbols are messages. They're telling you something. And symbols are very powerful, if you don't think so. Wear an armband with a swastika on it and walk into your local synagogues and see the kind of response
you
will get.
No, thank you. And you're right about that. You see somebody with a swastika on, which was an ancient symbol before, which was destroyed by Adolf Hitler and his group of cronies.
Right.
But you look at it now, and that's what you think about.
Precisely. And that's the point. And therefore, symbols affect us spiritually, emotionally, and we even use things like if you need some tape, we'll say, hand me the Scotch tape. Well, it may not be Scotch company, but everybody thinks of it as Scotch tape.
Yes.
Well, because words and terms and propaganda is continually bombarding us.
They did a great marketing job. Same with tissue paper. You say, get me a Kleenex,
that's
right?
That's it. Exactly. Yep. And so, consequently, I'm saying that we, in our world today, we have what is referred to as a consensus reality. The reality that we have all decided upon, for better or for worse, we've all decided is true. And so it's a consensus reality. Well, I am of the opinion that, no, there's a lot more going on here that they haven't told you. Why is it that all birds, fish, and animals on the prairie, why is it that birds and fish all immediately fly in a different direction together? What causes that phenomena? What causes people all of a sudden to grab onto something and everybody's doing it? The hula hoop, the rap music, all of a sudden,
same with clothes. You know, you're out here in Los Angeles and you see some woman buy a fad outfit, and they've all got it.
That's the point.
I mean, it's
overnight.
Yeah.
And I have young people around me tell me, "Oh, I hear some noise on the radio," and they're telling me, "Oh, this is the biggest group in the world. I mean, they've made millions." And I'm thinking, "I've never heard this stuff before." And how long have they been out? They've been out for 3 weeks. Well, how could they be that big? Well, they are.
Well, let's talk about the motivation for secret societies, first of all, and without getting into specific names, because you don't have proof over who they might be.
Of course.
But you do have the ability to say what they might be, the kinds of people that are involved in these things, because I think it's bigger than governments. I think bigger than elected officials. And, you know, they're the puppet master of the puppets, and we're all the puppets here.
Well, no doubt about that.
What do they want, first of all, Jordan? They've got more money than God, don't they?
Well, yes, and if they don't, they can always print it, you know. They've got printing presses.
Legal printing presses,
yeah,
right?
That's right. And
but I mean, what do they want? What's their motivation here?
Well, again, I have to preface it by saying it's just a subjective opinion of mine, but I think that these people whom we would say are the puppet masters are themselves puppets of a higher power.
Oh, really?
Yes. I am totally convinced for myself that some of the most hidden, powerful people in the world are themselves, in subjection to higher authorities.
And how high might these other authorities go?
Well, now we're talking about, is there something to this story of extraterrestrials intermingling with the human family? As a matter of fact, I have to tell you this. I watched an hour television show a few years back on UFOs on one of the channels, and in it, Gordon Cooper he had about 2 or 3 minutes here and there, probably about 5 minutes total out of the whole hour, of Gordon Cooper making comments about his views on extraterrestrials and UFOs.
And he spotted a few.
Yes.
Yep.
So I called the producer, who I happen to know, and I asked him, I said, how long was the interview? Because I know what they do. They'll tape you for 2 hours and use 2 minutes.
Sure.
And so I said, how long was that interview? And he said, oh, it's about an hour and a half at least. And I said, could you make me a copy of that whole interview? And he said, well, I'm not supposed to because it's...
You got the outtakes, huh?
Right. But I talked him into at least giving me a director's cut so I could watch the whole interview. Well, what I am telling you is absolutely astounding. The things which Gordon Cooper, he's a national hero.
Former astronaut to some people who maybe 15 years old or 20 and they don't know who he was.
Well, he was an astronaut and he was one of the first guys out there on the cutting edge.
One of the seven.
That's right. And he is a brilliant guy and very, very smart man, and he had to be an astronaut. Well, on this interview, they had, like, I guess, 3-camera shoot. And so when he was on camera and it was being interviewed by this young girl, it was a very interesting interview. But what really got interesting is when it was off camera, when they would shut the cameras down and they were going to move the set around a little bit, one of the cameras kept rolling. And they recorded the conversation between the hostess and Gordon Cooper off camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it was interesting. And she asked him, and I still have a copy of this thing right here in my office. She asked him, what do you think about the idea of UFOs and extraterrestrials? And he said, I work with one. We have been working with him for some time. We found him in Mexico when he crashed. And our government went down and cordoned off the area where he crashed. We nursed him back to health. He's now with us in this country, and we've been working with him. And I've worked with him personally. So,
I thought, wow, man,
put that on the air.
Why did they put that on?
No, thank you. No, and. You know, it was just startling to hear Gordon Cooper say, no, I don't believe in extraterrestrials. I work with one.
Well, but do you think secret societies were set up because of this relationship, or were they set up because of greed?
I think they were probably set up by extraterrestrials. I think that they were probably ultimately set up by these other world entities who the Bible says in Genesis look like men. They were called sons of God,
mm-hmm.
and this is a very important point. You need to understand there's a world of difference in the Bible between angels, sons of God, and the watchers. The sons of God, we are told over and over, look like humans. They look like men. They were able to procreate with females, which means their body operated like a human male.
Right.
So consequently, they could have children, they could have offspring, And they were, and as a matter of fact, I come across something a few years ago that still blows my mind. It's in the Old Testament in the book of Job 26. And Job 26:5 says this, keeping in mind, this is the Old Testament, it says, dead things are found from under the waters and the inhabitants thereof. And the reference right across on the page, it says, dead things are found from under the waters. The Eliphaz must be supplied thus this quote, the place where the Rephaim stay. And the word is R-E-P-H-A-I-M, Rephaim. The place where the Rephaim stay, which is beneath the waters, and the things that are living therein. This place answers to the other place, Sheol, or the grave. Then it says, the dead things, quote, is a Hebrew word, the Rephaim, which is the offspring of fallen angels that are akin to the Nephilim, but are different. So we're talking about in Job 26:5, extraterrestrial are dead things which are living in the oceans. Well, now that opens up a whole new can of worms about Atlantis. And of course, we know there was a pyramid found on the ocean floor.
Indeed.
Of the Atlantic. Dr. Ballantyne found that thing. It's the Miami Oceanographic Institute. Dr. Ballantyne found flying over the Bahama Banks, 10 miles north of Bimini, found a pyramid sitting on the floor of the Atlantic.
One would think it sank. Maybe it never did. Maybe it was always built on the bottom.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe the water was in a different place 100,000 years ago, you know.
It could be.
So the point being is that we have taken too many things for granted. And once you start really examining the words, the terms, the concepts, and where they've come from, doing that kind of research, you begin to see that there's a whole world of stuff that we've never been told. And I believe that this kind of knowledge is now finally coming into its own. It's taken a long time. I was talking about secret societies, fraternal orders, especially the Illuminati, back in 1967. I was giving lectures around Los Angeles. I was talking in 1963 and 64 about secret societies. So it's finally now coming into,
Did you know Stanley Kubrick?
No, I did not, but I have a feeling, and this I can't prove this, but with his last movie, which he didn't get a chance to finish.
Eyes Wide Shut, right?
Yes, that was a tremendous movie.
All right, hold that thought, Jordan. I want to talk with you about that and some other secret societies and get a little bit more information on why you believe they are tied into extraterrestrials and why they want this control over us. Maybe they have to.
Can't believe what you're hearing? Listen to it again when you sign up for StreamLink at www.coasttocoastam.com. It's only 15 cents a day.
Jordan, when I first watched Eyes Wide Shut, I didn't understand it. And then I did a little more homework into the Illuminati, watched the movie again, and it made a lot more sense to me.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's, I think, well, I'm just saying what I think. I think that, what was his name again, the producer?
Stanley Kubrick?
Yeah, Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick died before that movie was finished. My gut feeling is, can't prove it, but my gut feeling is, I think he was taken out because of that movie. I think he was trying to tell us something. Many of his movies were always very Promethean. They were always telling you something. And I think that this movie, he was getting up in years, and he was an extraordinarily well-informed man in Hollywood, and I think he was trying to tell the world something. And I think he was probably, probably taken out because of that. That's my feeling.
And Kubrick had a very difficult time with this movie. I think even in part of the editing before he died, it would on and on and on. And I think the movie distributor company that financed it, they were getting pretty unhappy over the length that was taking him to get this thing finished.
Yeah, I heard the same thing. Yeah. And then mysteriously he dies.
Secret societies, though, they are out there. Is it a matter of necessity to have this kind of control over the population of the planet?
Well, I think that there's never been, ever, a time on the Earth, and I mean ever, when the human family has ever been free. I don't think there's ever been a time in any place in history where we humans have ever truly been free.
And that's a big word, truly. You have to underline that.
Yeah, because, we talk about America being the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, we're not free or brave.
We're as free as I guess you can get.
Yeah, we're about as free as anybody's ever been, but we're not free. And if you don't think so, wait till you get a knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning from the police department. Or you get a subpoena to court, or, why, and that's the whole story, too. I mean, let me go back to the movie about Mel Gibson just to make a comment here.
All right.
In relation to movies. As I said, I had the highest respect for Mel and for his purposes, and I think it was for a good reason that he was making the movie, a comment. But at the same time, I have worked with attorneys in New York for the Holocaust survivors, doing research for them on the Nazi connections in America and the banking connections around the world. I was happy to be able to do a little something to help them in relation to the Holocaust survivors. So I appreciate the Jewish concern, because it's true. There is no doubt in my mind, anyone who knows history knows that religion and the shall we say, the zeal and the fervor which is whipped up by the entertainment industry could very well bleed over into other areas that would be unfortunate. So I don't think that it's an idle concern for the Jews to be concerned about the movie. I totally agree that that too much persecution of the Jews in the Middle Ages because of religious zeal gone wrong. And we know that's happening around the world today. We talk about the fundamentalists. Well, my Lord, we have fundamentalists here. And so I think that it's well-founded, their concern. I don't have any problem with that. And as I said, I've worked with attorneys, and so I'm intimately aware of some of the behind-the-scenes research going on about the politics of demonizing the Jew. And so I'm very concerned about that. Again, I don't think that that's what Mel was doing. So I think there's room for concern on both sides. And I would hope that America would be able to look past the rhetoric that's going on both sides and keep a cool head. Because I think there's concern on both sides, and I understand it. Now, the second thing I would like to address is the point that we talked about ancient civilizations. In Genesis, the fourth chapter, it's a very interesting story about Cain killing his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says in Genesis 4:13, it says, and then when God saw what Cain had did, he called him out for it and said, "What have you done?" And Cain said to the Lord, and I'm reading this, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that finds me will slay me." And the Lord said unto Cain, therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance will be taken on him sevenfold. So the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him. Well, wait a minute. If Adam and Eve were the first two, and then they have two sons, Cain and Abel, Cain kills Abel.
Who's left?
Then who's left? And Cain says, don't send me out there because they're going to get me.
Who's they, right?
Precisely. Who is they? Now, I talk for many years ago, I used to have a running conversation with a very high-ranking rabbi in America. I'm not going to mention his name because many people will know it. But we used to have long conversations, and I loved those hours. We would talk about theology, the Jewish perspective on things. And he said to me once, he said, when you read the scripture, he pointed out in Genesis 9:1, it says, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth. The rabbi brought out that the word replenish is correct. Re means do it again. Obviously, if there's been a flood and people have died, if the purpose of God is to have people on the earth, then you're going to have to, quote, replenish the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that makes sense. However, as the rabbi brought out, go back to Genesis 1:28, where the first male and female are being created by God, and it says, and God blessed them. This is Genesis 1:28, talking about Adam and Eve. And it says, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful, multiply, and replenish the earth.
Like there was something before them.
Precisely. Now, what? Let's go back to Genesis 1 quickly to conclude this. Genesis 1:2, the second scripture, says, well, let's read it from the first. It says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. 2 says, and the earth was without form and void. That is not exactly what it says in the Hebrew. That we read it in the English, and the earth was without form and void. In point of fact, it is actually in Hebrew that the earth became, not was, but became a waste and a desolation.
Something happened.
Yes, precisely. And that word, tohu vohu, in Hebrew, which simply means became a desolation, is only used twice, once at Genesis 1:2 and once in Jeremiah 4. And in Jeremiah 4, it's interesting, it says, I beheld the earth, and this is Jeremiah 4:23, it says, I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void. No, it became a waste and a desolation. And it says, and I beheld, and look, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens have fled. And I beheld, and look, the fruitful place was now a wilderness, and all of the cities thereof were now broken down at the presence of the Lord.
Sounds like a nuclear holocaust,
it
Jordan.
It sounds like something like that, that there were the cities that were there are now no longer there. It became a waste and a desolation.
When might that have happened?
Well, that's interesting. We know that there are seven different areas in the in the area of Israel, Lebanon, which are indentations in the earth that you can only see from, or you really only see it well from the plane, that are looked like craters, and they found in those craters a residue on the rocks, which they did not understand what this residue on the rocks in these craters were in the Middle East until after they dropped the Hiroshima, Nagasaki atomic bomb.
Same kind of glass-like.
Same kind of material. So from Zachariah Sitchin, and incidentally, I've sent Zachariah Sitchin around the world. I've had contracts with him to produce his television shows that I wanted to do with him. So I've had a lot of opportunity to sit and talk with Zachariah in private, and I did an interview with him.
You respect him as a scholar?
I love Zachariah Sitchin. He's a wonderful man. He's brilliant. But I will tell you this in public, one thing. There is far more to Zachariah Sitchin than meets the eye.
Mm.
The man is not just a brilliant scholar and a wonderful author, but he there's just more to Zechariah than you know.
That's another show.
Yeah, that is another show. So anyway, but the point being is that the earth became, and that's why the rabbi said to me, the Bible does not say, and this I guess this is the clincher point, the Bible does not say that God created man. Go back and read it correctly. It says, come, let us make man in our image after our likeness. And he said to me, it's the way you're misreading it. Go back and read it correctly. It is, what it is actually saying is that God is not creating man. And then he read it to me this way. God said, come, let us make man in our image after our likeness, saying that, come, let us make man in our image,
mm-hmm.
after our likeness, not the way he is. Let us make man to look like us.
Which sounds like a group of people or an entity or
ours.
Something.
Who is us and our? Come, let us make man. And now man has become as one of us.
And you think they were extraterrestrials?
That's what I think. I totally believe.
Now,
that.
When do you think this nuclear event, if that's what it was, occurred? Because a lot of people have said, even Michael Cremo, that we have had past civilizations on this planet that might have been millions of years older than what we had thought.
Perhaps billions. Perhaps with a B. Billions.
Perhaps.
I know the work of Michael Cremo, extraordinarily brilliant author. And I'm totally sure he's on to something. I think that, as we talked about at the very beginning of the program, you mentioned that the scientists are finally dawning on them that there may have been some more ancient civilizations.
Advanced ancient civilizations.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course there are. Of course. And so I'm just fascinated by how much we don't know.
Well, because of this, though, let me ask you an astrotheology question.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that all this might have occurred the way that you've interpreted it and some others have as well does not negate the fact that somewhere in this universe is that divine being, does it?
Oh, heavens, no. As far as I'm concerned, let me state categorically, I am totally convinced that there is a divine presence in the universe that men have called God. I have no problem with that at all. It is one of my major beliefs I am totally convinced of, is that there is a God, so to speak. However, the word God, once you get into where the words came from and the concepts, but I don't have any problem whatsoever with believing that there is a divine presence in the universe that we call God. Now, once we get past that, now it gets interesting. You know, God is nothing more than the word dog spelled backwards. This is why you have church dogma.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we talking about? Now, the word God comes from a German word Gott, G-O-T-T, or Goth, giving us the word Gothic, or Gothic architecture, and Gothic cathedrals. Well, Gothic in Scandinavia, Denmark and that area, God is spelled G-U-T, gut. So therefore, if you've got a gut feeling, gut is a Scandinavian word for God.
In Hebrew, it's Yahweh, isn't
it? Yes, exactly. So consequently, when you start looking at, it's fascinating how Hollywood interweaves all of these stories. The one subject after all of these years that I have finally settled on to be for myself the most interesting of all is not the secret societies, not the UFO, but the religion of the Nazis. That is the thing that is still blowing me away today.
Well, we got a few minutes. What do you mean by that, the religion of the Nazis?
The planet Saturn. Saturn, the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Was extremely important to the Nazis.
Why?
Once you understand Nazi theology, the religion of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, man, it opens up a world that you are not going to believe. When we talk about Saturn, Saturn was referred to as the Lord of the Rings. Women were told to listen to their Lord, and we make movies about Lord of the Rings. And inside the ring, in the first movie, I haven't seen the other two, but the first one shows runic writing. You better go back and look at that movie. It's talking about the planet Saturn. Saturn was the Lord of the Rings, as I said. Women were told to listen to their god, Saturn, so they would wear an ear ring. Men were to get married before their god, so they would wear a wedding, an engagement ring. The kings were to get crowned before Saturn, so they wear a round crown, becoming the corona later.
Well, what's the significance of all this, though?
Well, the Saturn is referred to as the inhibitor, the one who holds you back. He's represented as the dark powers that hold you back and teach you lessons. Consequently, Saturnalian symbols are like the mafia, like the police, government, the CIA. Those are Saturnalian institutions in that they are very powerful, quiet, sophisticated, and they are very, very powerful. And so that is a Saturnalian symbols. Now, the planet Saturn is really seen everywhere. The planet, the color associated with the planet Saturn is black. And this is why when you go into courtrooms, judges wear black robes. Catholic priests wear black robes. I mean, many times young people graduating from university and college wear a black robe.
Mm-hmm.
Black robes represent the planet Saturn. Saturn is the inhibitor. He's the teacher. But now it connects directly to the Nazi movement. And it's an extraordinary story. There are lots of doctoral theses, reference works out there galore, explaining the connection between Saturn, the Nazi movement. Incidentally, in Saudi Arabia, we have Mecca.
Was this like, well, let's not bounce around too much here.
Well, but in Mecca is the symbol for Saturn. Mecca represents the planet Saturn.
Is this all part of the occult that you
yes,
were talking about?
That's right. And so many people in the in Saudi Arabia and Muslims around the world do not realize that the square of Mecca, which is the most holy site in all of Islam, represents the planet Saturn.
I know. With all that said and done, so what?
Well, so what are we talking about? There is an occult or hidden religion which dominates the occult world, which is dark and hidden. This is why you have Darth Vader wearing the black robe. You have Dracula wearing the black robe,
mm-hmm.
the black cape. Black has always been the symbol of that which is dark and sinister. And so the color for the planet Saturn is black. Once you begin to do research on the planet Saturn and its astrological significance, and especially its significance of secret societies, the most important secret society in Germany today is called the Brotherhood of Saturn, of the Saturnalian Brotherhood.
Hmm.
And it is a very powerful order in Germany and in Europe.
So here's the question: why Saturn? Very quickly.
Well, Saturn, I don't even know that I can answer it in quick.
All right, well, hold that thought then. Hold that thought, Jordan. We'll be right back with you. We'll take phone calls as well. We've still got another hour with you, so we'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
So, Jordan, we know about the secret societies and the fact that they exist, but what's their mission with this control?
Well, that's a subjective opinion of mine. I think that probably whoever created us, I shouldn't be a bit surprised if we were someone else's experiment, and they're naturally going to be concerned about what are we doing with this earth that they have put us on. and they know that they have to have exercise some kind of control over us. We do the same with animals. This is why humans are called cultures. You know, we have different cultures. Well, a culture is something that's under a test tube, that's being watched and nurtured. So I that's just my opinion, but I think somebody else is in charge on this earth, and humans are not. And therefore, some of the things that we're seeing happening is not, it doesn't make sense to us humans. Well, maybe it doesn't have anything to do with us humans. Somebody else is manipulating the human race to accomplish hidden agendas. And I've always believed that.
Well, do you think the secret societies, case in point, the Illuminati, with memberships of whomever may be there, do you think that these people are alien in DNA, or do you think that they are human beings who have been given this task? Who do you think they are?
Well, you know, if you remember that when the Illuminati, we're talking about the Bavarian Illuminati, because the original word Illuminati was applied to the Jesuits. Jesuits were the first time we ever encountered the word Illuminati were actually Jesuits of the
right.
Catholic Church. But now what we're back basically talking about is the Bavarian Illuminati. And I think that probably, because it's coming from Germany, it's coming from the Germans, there is some kind of a connection between the ancient Germanic peoples and alien life forms from other worlds. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, because this is what Adolf Hitler believed. This is what the Nazis believed, that they were in contact with other world powers and other world entities. Well, what they accomplished in such a short period of time and the kind of technology they have brought to the world, and Bill Corso's book talking about alien technology that we are now using, I just suspect that maybe there has been this collusion behind the scenes between humans, which are prepared to be able to handle this task of dealing with extraterrestrials. Not all of us are.
Well, they lost World War II. Something went awry.
Yeah, well, maybe there are others here who are on our side. Who knows?
Well, that could be. Let's go to some phones. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
Let us go, first of all, to East of the Rockies. You are on Coast to Coast with Jordan Maxwell. Hi.
Hi, this is Michael. I'm talking out of Chattanooga, Tennessee there, WGOW.
Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
I grew up in the Deep South, and when I was a child, I lived right across the street from what they call a clavern, mm-hmm. which is for the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
And it really fascinates me about Hollywood, how they portray the Ku Klux Klan as just a small group of people, you know, and it's really bigger than that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you don't know who's a Ku Klux and who's not, you know. Mm-hmm. And they're still around, and there's still, you know, quite a lot of them.
Oh, I know.
And
yes.
It's not like Hollywood portrays it, you know. And they're a real secret society. That's why they call them the Invisible Empire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the South, the word they, or when you say they, you're talking about the Ku Klux.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're always watching.
I would guess some of the membership doesn't even know who their other members are, right?
Well, one, you know, they have different claverns. For instance, in one neighborhood, you might have a clavern there. And, you know, these, you're taught from a young age, you know, to embrace, you know, their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after the racial trouble of the 60s, they all went underground. But, you know, they're still there, and a lot of them are politicians and prominent people, and, you know, that's what it means when it says invisible in Barry. You don't really know who's who.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, you know, with wizards and dragons, the Celtic connection there.
Yeah, yeah, very, very, very important. You have something called the Bohemian Grove. The very word "grove" is a tip-off. That is a very powerful word. If you understand how the secret societies use that word "grove," it's in the Bible. Grove worshippers, and that is a very Celtic Druidic symbol. Grove. They meet in the grove, the Bohemian Grove. So, yeah, there's a real story there.
The societies, how many are there? There are many or just a few?
Who are you asking?
You. I'm not asking him.
Oh, okay. I would say that there are many different various societies coming out of Northern Europe and out of Europe in general. But I'm talking about that particular group, what we call the Bohemian Grove.
Right.
I'm just saying that the word grove is a very interesting and important word in relation to secret society.
But we hear about Illuminati, Bilderbergers, and all these other different... Are they the same? Are the same people in there?
I don't think they're the same, but I think that they have common cause, you know, that Ford Motor Company and General Motors are not the same, but they are all in the world of making cars and making money, so they obviously are in tune with each other. So I think that these different societies are in tune with each other. They have certain agendas that they're trying to accomplish together sometimes against each other.
First time caller line, welcome to Coast, you're on with Jordan Maxwell. Hi there.
Hello, this is Jamie.
Hi, Jamie, go ahead.
Yes, I was sitting here listening to him, and he said that he thinks that the aliens is what set up the secret societies. And, well, I'm trying to figure out, I mean, why would they want to do that without no certain direction? I mean, he just said that they have their own agendas from time to time. But, I mean, is there just their main goal, destruction of the Earth, or is it... to lead us to a better way? Because, I mean, the way I look at it, if they were doing it for good, I mean, we wouldn't have the problems with the ozone layer or such things, you know what I'm saying? I mean, what's his opinion on how they feel about us?
Well, why do we humans also, the higher-ups, the elders and the elites in our society and throughout the world, why do we collect ourselves into fraternal orders in societies and groups, which are opposed to other groups? So the idea and the concept of collecting yourselves together seems to be an intelligent thing that an elitist intellectual or spiritual elitist group would do. They're not going to hobnob around with us, the common people, so they would... naturally, birds of a feather flock together, kind of thing. They would see more power by keeping to themselves, and we do that ourselves.
Jordan, do the Hopi? I think they do. The Hopi Indians believe that we have been destroyed several times as people.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I'm not really that well aware of the prophecies, etc., but I do know that they are talking about the same kind of thing, that there are star beings. They talk about the aliens from other worlds who have come here, how there has been world destruction on a massive scale in the past, and they're also talking about seeing their prophecies are coming true again. And yes, they do talk about star beings and other worlds. The Hopis are very interesting. I'd like to know more about that.
You know, the tribe, the Dogon tribe.
Oh, yes, over in Mali.
Yes, and they, Mali, yes. Of course, they have been told about the star system Sirius and everything else. Now, here's something interesting. A lot of people believe, okay, extraterrestrials had to tell them because there's no way they would have known this information with the naked eye.
Yeah.
What if there was a past civilization that had high technology and telescopes and things like that, and that is what was passed down?
Well, all right, and that's at least plausible. However, they were saying, the Dogon peoples were saying, that there were three stars in line, and there's no way that we could know that from the Earth. They said that there was Sirius, the dog star, but behind Sirius, there were two other stars. There were three in a row. And they said that the third one was the heaviest of all, in all of the creation of the universe, was the heaviest, was the third one. Well, from the Earth, there's no possible way we would have ever seen all three. So it implies that somebody from out there must have told them. And that's what they're saying. The Dogon tribes, teachers say that they were told by extraterrestrials, and if I'm not mistaken, they say that every 7 years or so, these extraterrestrials come back to Somalia and talk with and visit with the Dogon tribes. I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
That's where we should be next if we could time it right. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. Hey, Jordan. How y'all doing tonight?
Fine. Thank you.
Great. Great subject tonight. I have a question for your guest. Going back to Hitler, he was obsessed with the occult. It seems like a lot of his henchmen were also. I have a question. He speaks a few times about the new man and how he was afraid of the new man. It worried him. He had met him. And I was wondering if you thought that might be related to Middle Earth, which he was obsessed about. Maybe the new man was an alien or a reptilian from Middle Earth.
All right, good. I appreciate that question. I was going to say the same thing, that I also am very, very concerned. That's one of my chief concerns and worries today, not for my own safety, but for the general safety of the human family. I am also very concerned about what is called the new man. That's simply N-E-W-M-A-N. You do some research on the new man. Adolf Hitler believed that the sons of God, these aliens, he said, were preparing the human family to evolve into a higher race of entities, and that's what his Gestapo and his whole apparatus was set up to do, is to be the instruments by which the human race could be cleansed of undesirables and the eugenics of crossbreeding people with higher entities. It's called the new man, and I think that is something that's very legitimate and might very well be going on today. And they make movies like The Island of Dr. Moreau with Marlon Brando. These kind of movies have been made for many years in Hollywood about mad scientists crossbreeding humans with animals. I've heard this story from many, many places.
Wouldn't it be amazing that Hitler's quest for power and his mental imbalance was based on the fact that he may have believed or may have been given information about an extraterrestrial race wanting something?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, there's a wonderful book that you can't find right now anywhere called The Morning of the Magicians by two French occultists who wrote this book, and it's translated into English, and I have it, called Morning of the Magicians, in which they talk about Hitler's concentrating on trying to communicate with the alien life forms from other worlds to recreate man, and call him the new man, the new creature that's going to take over the world. And this new man will not have any emotions. He will not have any spiritual longings. He will be a corporate mentality. All he will know is what the corporation and the government tells him, and he will have there will be no problem with him doing whatever his masters tell him to do. He will be the new man. And this is why I agree that the Jews do have a legitimate concern about this whole subject of the reinstituting of Nazism in the world today. I am telling you, it is happening. We are seeing the re-emergence of the Nazi world philosophy coming into being in this world, and I am frightened, and I believe that the Jews have a right to be frightened and concerned, and I think all Americans have a right to be concerned about this very possible happening to us.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I love your show. This
Thanks.
Is Vernita from Jackson, Mississippi.
Hi, Vernita.
And my question is, are aliens evil? Are they from God, and what is their purpose?
I didn't hear the question.
Are they evil? Are they from God? What's their purpose, aliens?
Angels. Well,
aliens.
Oh,
aliens.
I'm sorry, aliens. Well, aliens, I guess, would be just entities from other planets and other places in the universe. And there are a lot of scientists and astronomers talking openly about the fact that we're not alone in the universe, and maybe their form of evolution, they have evolved into spirit entities. Maybe they were created spirit entities. Doesn't mean they're good or bad. It just means that there are other kinds of life forms out there, and maybe they're coming here.
Jordan, right before the hour break, we didn't have enough time for you to finish your answer on Saturn. And when I meant to say to you of this so-called Saturn connection, so what? The so what was really why the importance of Saturn in their thought.
Well, again, it's a big story. All I would say is that for anyone interested in that, it's a lot of information out there, a lot of good books. All you have to do is go on the web and just put in the occult significance of Saturn, and you will begin to see that the uniforms that the Nazis were wearing, their insignias were Saturnalian. Saturn was a very important in the ancient religions. In the ancient religions of the Middle East, Saturn was a very powerful symbol and a very powerful god.
Was it an evil or negative symbol?
Yes, it was, in point of fact. It was a negative and, for lack of a better term, evil. It always pictured the god Saturn always, of course, in the Roman Empire was one thing, but I'm talking about the ancient world of the Middle East. Saturn was the inhibitor, the dark side of the force. Darth Vader, the courtroom, the judge. It always symbolized the undercurrent of political or occult power over the world. And
how strange that this gets carried through to society,
yeah.
And in some cases we don't even know about that unless we chat with someone like you. You know, we take these things for mental gratitude of, you know, people walking around in robes that are black. You never would think about the reason for it.
Yeah, I know. As a matter of fact, Saturn was referred to as El, and anybody who would promote the worship of Saturn became known as an elder. This is where we get our concept of the elites. Why? Because because it goes back to El. And how did you get to be an elite? Well, you got elected. That's why you have elections. and consequently, how do you get elected? Well, you got to have the juice. It's called electricity. There is a whole world of interesting connections between words and the planet Saturn and the ancient religions and secret societies.
And I'll be right back in just a moment.
Want to time travel? Go back to past shows on Streamlink. Sign up online at coasttocoastam.com.
And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Jordan Maxwell, my guest, and your phone calls for this remaining half hour. Jordan, where do your travels take you next?
Well, I think I'm going to be going to Egypt, England, Australia, and Switzerland. And all of a sudden got busy again.
Are you seeking something on these missions?
No, I'm being invited to speak in different conferences and places. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be speaking up in Santa Clara very soon at the UFO. I think it's called the Bay Area UFO Conference. That's in September. And, of course, I'm also speaking at the Conspiracy Con. That's a big one. Up in Santa Clara. You can go on my website and check it out, Conspiracy Con, and that's going to be in Northern California.
JordanMaxwell.com, by the way.
Right, JordanMaxwell.com.
You are not related to any coffee empire.
I don't think so, no.
You've got that perfect name, though.
Well, Well, thank you.
You really do. Ready for some more calls?
Yes, and before we do that, I'd like to give out a phone number for those who
sure.
might want to call anytime, 24 hours a day, for whatever reason. It's a toll-free number, 888-212-5400. 888-212-5400.
Simple enough.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast with Jordan Maxwell. Hi there.
Hi there. I had a question I'm hoping that George can help me out with. I've been dealing with this for 10 years. That situation you were talking about that scared the heck out of you when you were a child,
mm-hmm.
you are the first person I have ever heard say that. And I had a similar incident, and I was just wide awake. I don't remember anything before. I couldn't move. I knew that they were at the foot of my bed. I couldn't see them. My husband continued to sleep. He was not even aware.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so terrified that if I could have crawled into his skin, I would have.
Mm-hmm.
It was so horrifying that when I could, I got out of the bed, and I remember writing the entire thing down, thinking it was a dream. And although, believe me, it didn't feel like it.
Yeah.
The strange, bizarre thing that scared me even worse is the next time it happened, again, I went to write it down. And when I looked back at the previous log, it was exactly a month apart, exactly within the day and the hour of the first incident.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw the book away that I was writing in, and I just was, like, very upset. And all I remember during those two incidences was begging God to make them go away. And I guess my question is, was that a dream, or does that sound like anything you've ever heard of before?
Is it like yours? I hear these kind of experiences all the time. Also, one of the nice things that a part about what I do is I'm in the company of other researchers and writers and people who are on the cutting edge, and I hear these kind of stories all over the world. This is what makes me believe that there is too much smoke not to be a fire. I think that there are other life forms here, and some of them are extremely evil. Some of them may be very helpful to us. They're not all bad. They're not all good. I'm not an expert on this subject, but I have had too many experiences and been in the company of too many people who are experts in their own field, and I am sure that there is something to this. I know what I felt and experienced.
So you don't think it was a dream or anything?
No.
Because the funny thing is, I know that there's no way to explain this.
I know.
It was almost like a palatable sense of an absence of time. Not that I was missing or anything, but time stood still. Or
yeah, I know.
Does that make
yeah.
any sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
And
yeah.
and it was like they were evil. And you were the first person I've ever heard, and I've never told anyone this because I thought they'd think I was crazy.
Yeah.
So
well,
you're saying that they were beings?
Yeah, I think so. I think that ultimately that's what we will decide, and what we're going to find out is that not all living entities and all living things have to be physical. I think that the Bible is correct when it talks about angels or spirits. As George brought out, every culture in the world has talked about spirits and angels and entities, and my goodness, there's no doubt in my mind that these entities exist. And it's not the kind of a subject that you can do justice to, with the time restraints we have. But I have heard too many people having similar experiences. Yes, it's real.
All right, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Let's go to our East of the Rockies. And wow, the clock ticks fast when you're on, Jordan, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Tom, Lafayette, Indiana.
Hi, Tom.
WIBC tonight.
Welcome to the program.
On the Saturn thing, Hitler kind of drew from a lot of different mythologies and kind of screwed them up, but in the Teutonic mythologies, Saturn wasn't all that significant. It was the moon of Saturn that was significant. Because in the mythology, the Titans were rescued by Earth from their daddy and put on a moon of Saturn. And then when Mom got in trouble with the gods and whatnot, the Titans rode their moon over. and then attack the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And by the mythology, that's why the Christianized mythologies always consider the moon and Saturn evil. But basically, it's supposedly the moon that circles our planet now was originally from Saturn.
Yeah.
It's the Titan moon.
Hmm.
And the Teutonic Knights originally weren't even Christian, and they weren't Luciferian. They were the defenders of Mother Earth.
Mm-hmm.
From their point of view, the gods were bad. The children of Mother Earth the children of the gods were bad. And they're just defending their planet from alien invaders.
Well, I'm very well aware of the work of David Talbot and the Cronia Communication Group, or Cronia. They have done a lot of work on Saturn and its significance in the ancient world, its symbology, etc. And David has done a lot of work, and his name was David Talbot. And, I understand what you're saying.
You know, it's funny, today the astronomers have got a report on Saturn's rings, Jordan, mm-hmm. with some strange anomalies that they can't figure out. I think it's more physics-related than paranormal, but it's still strange that we get that story today as you talk about Saturn.
Yeah, well, you know, what was his name, Norman Berglund, who wrote Ringmaker?
I think so.
Yeah. And I met him, a delightful gentleman, and we talked for hours on this subject up in San Francisco area, where he's talking about it. He worked with NASA, and he's got pictures of one of the rings that's being formed right now. It's not completed, and it's his feeling that the rings are artificial. Someone's putting them there purposely for a reason. That's very interesting. He's got a book out, which my company will have to carry, because I love that subject.
You have videos, but do you have any books out?
Oh, yes. I've got some books. As a matter of fact, if you go on my web, there's about four or five of them right there on the web. And, of course, you can go on Google and hit Jordan Maxwell, and you'll see all of my books. But I've got them all myself, and it's on jordanmaxwell.com.
Good for
you. And if you are interested, again, the toll-free number is 888-212. That's 888-212-5400.
And that phone number is on the website as well?
Yes, it is. And it's 24 hours, and we'll try and get back to you and go on the web and check out all the materials that I've got and things that, and give me a call and leave a message. I'll get back to you.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast, and Jordan Maxwell here with us as your guest. Hi there.
Hi there. My name is Jeremy, and I'm calling from Palmdale.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. I just wanted to say, Jordan, hi, and we met back at Paul's probably in 96 when he was still staying down in Burbank, and it's good to see that you're still keeping up on your research.
Oh, thank you.
But I have two questions. The first is about the Nazi religion. How much of it do you think that Hitler took from Madame Blavatsky's work, The Hidden Doctrine, where she described the Aryan race as the oldest and most pure, and the Jewish race as the newest and least, in her opinion? And second, are your older videos still available through thebooktree.com, or are you handling all that now from your website?
Yeah, I'm handling all of my own materials through my website, jordanmaxwell.com. I've got all of my old materials, and we call them the classics. I'm working on a lot of new things now for television and for distribution. But yeah, you can get all of the old things too. It's all on my website. And yes, I do believe that Hitler was heavily influenced by the writings of Helena Blavatsky. I have all of her works too. I'm very interested in in Blavatsky's work, because she pops up many different places. A lot of people don't know about the influence that Helena Blavatsky had on the Nazis. So, yeah, there is something to that, too. Even JPL today was called, when it was founded, Jack Parsons Lab. That's where, and it was Jack L. Parsons and Aleister Crowley from England, the great magician from England,
mm-hmm.
Aleister Crowley, and L. Ron Hubbard of Scientology,
mm-hmm.
L. Ron Hubbard, Aleister Crowley, and Jack L. Parsons came together and formed what we today call JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab. So, yes, there is a very heavy connection with the occult world and space flight.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I did not know that at all.
Yeah, there's a very interesting story about the connection between space flight. Now, I mean, go back to NASA, N-A-S-A, and check the word. And it goes back to Jesus being a Nazarene, NASA, N-A-Z-A. Yeah. Bring me some. I mean, this stuff really gets interesting when you start breaking down the words. Jesus could not have been from Nazareth because there was no Nazareth in the first century. But he could very well have been a Nazarene. Look up the word. Go to a dictionary and look up the word Nazarite or Nazarene. It's spelled N-A-Z-A-R-I-T-E. Look it up and see what it says in the dictionary about Nazarite or Nazarene. And you find out that N-A-S-A and N-A-Z-I are all connected to NASA or NASA or Nazarene. And there's a world of information about our space.
Fascinating. You would have been a fun professor to have in college.
Oh, I love all kinds of strange stuff. That's what I love doing.
Go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, George. My name is Julia. Excuse me.
Hi, Julia.
And hi. I'm from San Diego. And I was originally from St. Louis. So anyway, I love your show. And I've spent many a night glued to their show in my driveway because I can't get out of my car. And I've wanted to call many times, so it's really cool to be on.
Well, thanks. Go ahead.
And I wanted to mention, you've asked callers to call in when they've had otherworldly experiences, and there's been a lot of times I've thought of calling in or I've tried and haven't gotten through. But I wanted to kind of bounce this off Jordan, and I never have fully figured out why I've had so many experiences, but it started, and I won't say a whole, like, in-depth stories right now.
Yeah, we don't have time.
No, oh, I don't want to do that anyway. My point I'm wanting to make is that when I was young, like 12 years old, like Jordan was mentioning when he was really young, I started seeing spiritual beings, and totally unexpectedly, the first one was it was very strange, but half of a cat walking, and I made the big mistake of yelling and telling my mother, who thought I was insane. She was very conservative. But anyway, then I had a few dabblings in the Ouija board, which I found out real soon was totally
stay
evil.
Away from the Ouija board.
Yeah, oh yeah, believe me, I found that and everything it said was negative and a lie. So I quit doing that. But then somehow I ended up continuing to connect with spirits, with spiritual beings. And it was to the point that I would even, like at the YMCA in St. Louis when I was only 12 and 13 years old, I'd bring groups of kids down in the basement when it was totally dark, and I'd ask spirits to show themselves, and a lot of times it would be like large skulls or different spiritual beings. Sometimes I'd bring individual friends in their closets, and they would change their identities from Indian to this or that, different things. And
well, as I said before, many of us, far more people than you would suspect, have had all of these kind of experiences. And again, I'm just saying, there's too much smoke not to be a fire, that there is definitely something going on right in front of us that many of us are experiencing, and I believe it's coming to a head. I think that eventually there's going to be some kind of a world event that's going to cause us to look for the first time at the possibility that we've been manipulated from day one, and then our history on the earth goes back millions of years, and there's a world of knowledge that's been hidden from us, and this is what I have been involving myself in for 43 years, and yes, I've heard all kinds of stories.
A lifelong quest, Jordan, a lifelong quest to get to the bottom.
No doubt about that.
Thank you. Let's give you that toll-free number out one more time, would you?
Thank you. Yes, it's 1-888-212-5400.
Very good. For Jordan, you want to look at some of the books and some of the things that he's talked about tonight. Also, if you do have a computer, jordanmaxwell.com. It's linked up with coasttocoastam.com. Jordan, we've got to do this again. Thanks for the stories,
Thank
by the way.
Thank you very much.
Fascinating
for having me on.
Talking with you.
Bye-bye.
For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Barbara Simpson, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition as we talk about the Coral Castle and try to figure out how Ed Lead Skullnan moved those huge blocks of stone, much like the Egyptians. Did they move those blocks of stones of the pyramids? We'll find out with our guest Joe Bullard, his book Waiting for Agnes. And you'll have no idea who Agnes is until you listen to the program. Until then, be safe, everyone.